WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse, with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade, gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. We're back after a little Thanksgiving break and a lot to cover today as Syracuse men's and women's basketball have really gone on a tear and changed the fortune of their seasons. It didn't look good at all for the men's team after not a disaster in Las Vegas, but a disappointment in Las Vegas. And we usually get Jack's team is playing some really good basketball right now as well. Both teams beat SEC opponents. That's something I don't think I thought I was going to be saying on the podcast. But before we get into all that, we got Griffin Bloom's team. We got Josh Rother. Griffin, it was 5 degrees when I woke up this morning. He's staying warm.
I'm trying. You know, it's the bit of a blizzard yesterday. I wouldn't call it a blizzard, but like a decent snowstorm.
No squall. Proper definition.
Sure. yeah. So that was a bit rough. You know, trying to battle through, as they say. You know, it is. I don't care if it's cold. As long as there's no wind, like 20 degrees in wind is a lot worse than like 5 degrees and no wind. That's what I would say.
Certainly. Josh, you figuring out a way to stay warm?
Yeah, I actually got to write the weather story for my audio newscast class yesterday. So I was actually prepared for this. We have a wind chill of a -4 low today. I mean, we're seeing record low temperatures across the nation we haven't seen since 1890s. That's how long it's been since we've seen this cold this early. So it's definitely an outlier year for sure. Actually, well, I know more about it. It's actually a polar vortex.
Wow.
It's a weakening and warming of winds up in the stratosphere that's causing it. And that has not happened more than one time since the 50s. So really some rare company right now.
How about that? I love that. You know, on the Ostrom podcast, we love the weather. It's just been a thing. It's been a thing before I got here. Jordan loved the weather. Jordan would be crying right now over that weather report, the detail. We know all the specifics right now. That is wonderful, Josh. That just made the pod right there. We could talk about anything else. Now that I know those details, I'm set. I know. I mean, I have to go out today, as I have to do every day, you know. But I'm going hats, gloves, maybe 2 sweatshirts. I don't know. Definitely the winter coat. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be cold. I mean, -4 wind chill, that's terrible.
That is pretty tough.
Something that's not terrible and something before we get to basketball that I have to cover and we have to talk about, because in the summer, me and Griffin, you know, we spent a whole podcast, basically a whole episode, praising Fran Brown, praising Syracuse football for landing Calvin Russell. And there weren't any murmurs throughout the whole regular season. He was at least 2 games. I'm pretty sure.
He was at a bunch. Yeah.
You know, it looked as though it was done and dusted. Then comes signing day on Wednesday. We're recording this Friday morning. And we get probably the worst possible news you get on a signing day, other than him signing for another team, that he needs to pray on the decision, needs to wait a few more days to figure it out. And I was just like, this is it. You know, he watched this season, and it was like he was thinking, well, if Steve Angeli isn't ready to go next year, or if he has another injury, God forbid, you know, what is going to throw me? Who is going to throw me the football? What is going to throw me the football? And he was like, yeah, maybe I'm going to go somewhere else. And I was thinking Miami, you know, we talked about it in the summer. We're like, how he didn't go to a Miami or a Florida. I know Michigan was also in the hat, you know, was beyond me. And then I was like, oh, you know, he's going to go to Miami. Thankfully, though, last night we got the very good clarifying news that he is going to sign with Syracuse football. And Griffin, this really saved Syracuse football, and not saved Fran Brown, but is a relief for Fran Brown, because if he did not come to Syracuse, that would have been a big dent in Fran Brown, because, you know, his coaching was always like, can he coach? And I think people said, oh, he proved that last year. But the number one thing was, oh, he can recruit. You know, he can recruit SEC territory. That's why we brought him in from the start. If Calvin Russell flipped, that would have been massively, massively disappointing for Fran Brown.
Yeah, and we've touched on it, how unheard it is for Syracuse to get a five star from anywhere, let alone from
Florida.
Miami, which
Yeah.
is just absurd. And
SEC country in a way.
the fact that Syracuse can beat out a school like Miami, like Michigan, that have won at the highest levels as a program, it is absurd. You know, Calvin Russell's mom is a legend. Athlete at Miami was. And so for him to not go there, like, that's kind of crazy. A program like Michigan has won a national title in the past 5 years. Like, these are things that Syracuse just historically has not been able to compete with. And I was worried, really worried on Wednesday when he did not sign the papers. And he had his Instagram live and everyone else from his school signed, Tadarius Hughes signed, who also goes to Miami Northwestern, to come to Syracuse. And I was like, okay, well, Syracuse has ties to Miami Northwestern. They have a bunch of, they have some transfers. They have some freshmen last year. If Calvin Russell doesn't sign, like, is that the end of what Fran Brown can do? Like, all this, we will touch on Tusi, of course, later. But, like, if Syracuse lands a rapper and then just loses its five-star recruit, like, that's a big deal. All this momentum that Fran Brown would have, I think, would just end. But on the other side, the fact that Calvin Russell stayed, got a five star to actually sign on the dotted line to come to Syracuse, that is how Fran Brown can kind of revamp a program that in the past 25 years has only had a limited amount of ups and a decent amount of downs. And I think that what Fran Brown is showing is that he can actually get guys to come, like, not just commit, like, actually get people to travel to Syracuse and play. And, you know, we've seen also a lot of guys from this year's team say they want to come back. So, a lot of promise, and just finally glad that all this recruiting. I'm a big recruiting guy, a big like portal guy, and so for this actually to be over and him to be signed is big.
Well, Griff, do you think it was an NIL dispute? Do you think that's what held him out for a couple of days?
No,
Maybe.
not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Because
I
I
really.
think there's a possibility he could have, you know, tried to set up a bidding war almost, like try and get Miami to offer him some money and see if Syracuse would match that. I think there's definitely some of that aspect. I'm from Michigan, and it was interesting because I remember his commitment day. There was a lot of Michigan fans. Well, a lot of my friends that were Michigan fans that were texting me, oh, you know, Russell's coming to Michigan. It's a done deal. And, you know, I had to hear about that. And I was like, I'm convinced Syracuse is going to get him. And when we landed him, it was nice to, you know, chirp back at him. And then, you know, months of silence. And then all of a sudden, earlier this week, you know, they start chirping again. And it's like, wow, like, is this really going to happen? Is Calvin Russell really going to decommit? I remember his commitment night as well. It was very confusing. There was a lot of reports on X that he had committed, and he said he didn't commit. He was late to his commitment party by, I think, over an hour. I mean, there was just a lot of confusion on that night. And then when he did end up signing, or when he did end up committing back then, that kind of subsided for a little while. I think he had reasonable concern to stay committed with how terrible the offense has been this year. Obviously, he would fit in pretty seamlessly as a five-star wide receiver. I think there would be no questioning what his role would be, but kind of just in general, thinking about where this offense was when he committed versus when he's going to sign is a night and day difference. And I think that was probably the reason that he wasn't 100% sure. Maybe wanted to hammer out those details with Fran Brown that he was going to be a major piece of a good offense. He just probably wanted some assertion that this was going to be the offense that he committed to, and not the one that it looks like when he signed.
Certainly, whatever it was that flipped the script for him, thank goodness it happened for a Syracuse perspective. And, you know, Griffin, you wanted to touch on it. I wasn't even going to touch on it, but we should. The rapper that signed for Syracuse. Have you listened to any of his music?
I'm not a big fan, but, you know, WER Sports staff members, Nick Evans, he's a big 2C fan. So, you know, I've gotten to listen to a little bit of his stuff in the past couple of days just because Nick's been playing it. But I really don't know what to think of it. I think that if, you know, he's bringing some NIL money to the program, if he's bringing some endorsements, maybe some high energy and vibes and some big posts that get hundreds of thousands of likes like his commitment posted, I'm all for it. You know, he's not going to get a scholarship, hopefully. Doesn't seem like
are we going to see Steve Angeli dancing in the middle of the locker room while 2C is singing a song? I mean, he did say he's putting a pause on his music career to pursue his football aspirations that he is now 7 years removed from.
Are Syracuse fans going to get a halftime show like out of this? Is he going to get other rappers to come to the dome? Like, is this a? I don't know. I'm excited. I think
big for business. Yeah, multiple faceted signing right here. They're thinking about the bigger picture, not just on the gridiron.
It's like when MLB teams sign like a Shohei Ohtani or a big Japanese star. Like, you're getting much more than the player. You're getting the viewership from overseas. You're getting all different angles and media outlets covering Syracuse. Sure. And there was a lot of it. There was a lot of it this week when 2C signed. I think his post got like 500,000 likes on Instagram or something crazy. So that's some numbies, as Jordan would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one that shocked me. I was not the recruiting news I wanted to hear at that point in time. But we got the right news that we wanted. The football season is over. We're done talking about football for a little while. We all need that. Season didn't end well. I didn't even really pay too much attention to that Boston College game, a really meaningless game that had nothing at stake in a season that will be defined by Steve Angeli tearing his Achilles, because Syracuse, they never won a game after that happened. And either way, it was a hard schedule regardless, but that Achilles tear certainly dictated how the rest of the season played out. It's on to basketball, and Syracuse men's basketball, they were in Las Vegas. That trip didn't go as planned. They nearly beat Houston. They probably should have beat Houston if they knocked down free throws. They didn't do that, and really, Houston brought all the momentum down. They kind of hung with Kansas for a bit. And then I got to say, I don't blame Adrian Autry's team for that Iowa State game. You guys can chime on this after we hit on Tennessee. But I think you had no idea you were playing them. How that worked out is beyond me. The tournament has to fix that. You can't just randomly pick teams off of going against your own format to pick a team makes no sense. No time to prepare. And then Iowa State, I think, they were upset that they weren't playing a better team and really hammered Syracuse. But that was all washed away because the Orange upset at the time, number 13, Tennessee, 62-60. And really, in college basketball, you know, in basketball in general, you can kind of always sense when an upset's going to happen. And this one sure had everything. It just had upset material written all over it right from the start. Really, you know, Syracuse continued to hang around really well. Nate Kings had a fantastic first half. He had 18 points in that first half, or I think maybe he had all 19 of his points.
All 19, yeah.
All 19 in that first half, which is amazing. He was a reason they really hung around on the offensive end. Defensively, Adrian Autry's team has played brilliant, really all season. They haven't skipped a beat defensively, and they continue to show that on Tuesday night as well. And then my guy, William Kyle, I mean, he's been Syracuse's best player all season, I think. You know, yeah, he can't make a free throw, but he can do just about everything else really, really well. Six blocks is really impressive for a guy who at UCLA, you know, couldn't crack the rotation, which is really beyond me. You know, it's kind of like, oh, how did this guy not get in the rotation at UCLA? But Fran Brown is certainly utilizing him to his best, and he is really fitting in seamlessly. Give credit to JJ Starling in this Tennessee game too. He was clutch at the end there as well, Griffin.
Yeah, I mean, I love what Fran Brown's been doing with William Kyle. I'm just making fun of you. You said
Oh,
Fred. You said
yeah,
Fred
my bad.
Brian
Right on the
Autry. Okay, no, we got. Hey, you said Fran Brown. We got to give Adrian Autry his credit, and
Yes.
I think he deserves a lot. You know, I was a little skeptical on how Syracuse would play coming out of Vegas. You know, Syracuse played five really good halves in Vegas. They played well against Houston. Should have won that game. Should have won that game. Kansas, they played well. Kansas was just the better team, and I think pulled away in the end. And there's not really much else to say. And then that first half against Iowa State, Syracuse was within 2 points at halftime. So I think that speaks for itself. And the second half was the second half. But like, I was like, is this a fluke? Like, is Syracuse just playing because they have energy and they're in Vegas and Carmelo's in attendance? Like, what was going on? And then they show up immediately out of the gates at home against a top 15 team. And that's when I was really like, okay, like this team has something to it. This isn't just a team that played a couple good games and like was okay. Like, this is a team that can compete with the top teams in the country. And after Houston, you're like, okay, maybe. But after Tennessee, it's like, yes, they can compete. And they're still missing Donnie Freeman, who is even going to add another dynamic. In the past couple of years of this team, they have not started strong. This is a team right now that is showing up to play with that level five energy that Coach Autry's been talking about, with the defensive intensity that the Syracuse program has lacked for the past 4 or 5 years. And so it's really, really interesting to see Syracuse compete. It shows that they had an off-season focus and an off-season mentality, and they're really showing it and executing it. Like, this is a program that Adrian Autry wants to have them run fast and play defense and attack the rim, and they're doing all of those things. If this team can figure out its free throw problem, like, this is going to be a tournament team. They got their signature win, they got their quad one win, and they're going to have a couple more opportunities to do that in ACC play. But against Tennessee, like, my only downside is like Nate King's had 19 points in the first half. He didn't get a shot in the second half. It didn't seem like he touched the ball at all. Like, that's got to change. I know JJ had a good second half, and a big credit to JJ on his second half. But if you got a shooter that's shooting well, you got a player that's attacking the rim with ease, and like he's just a showing his scoring threat, you got to get him the ball in the second half at some point.
I think my big takeaway here was from these four games, I think Syracuse kind of eased back. You know, they calmed the doubters a little bit here, because the game before Las Vegas was against Monmouth, and that was just a disaster. Big on Nate King's not getting a shot in the second half of that Tennessee game. I think that was a major issue, especially when he just absolutely goes off for 19 in the first half. And you can't find a way to get him a shot. I mean, this was my guy at the start of the year, and it's finally starting to come out. Nate Kings looks like one of the better scorers on this team, which is just great to see. In Vegas, first of all, make a free throw. I mean, that is just unbelievable. They have their worst three-game span of free throws in the last 10 years. That's just unbelievable that if they just shot like an average free throw, they win that game against Houston, and you know they probably still lose to Kansas. But then, if the tournament director just sticks to his format, they don't have to play Iowa State on Wednesday. If they could play Oregon or San Diego State or UNLV, they could leave Vegas 2-1. They could even be ranked. They could have a top 10 win against Houston. It would be a top 3 win, even though we all know Houston doesn't look as good as they did entering that tournament. But I mean, they could be looking at two top 15 wins early on in the season and before an easy non-conference stretch that could see them at 10-2 right now. You know, it's just the little things like that. If they make the free throws, this team is just in a little bit of a different spot right now. But regardless of them going 0-3 in Vegas, I'm really encouraged by the signs. JJ Starling looks to be, you know, back into that role of, you know, that combo guard. You know, he's going to be clutch down the stretch. He's going to be, you know, the scorer when they need him at the end of the game. And I think that's what we needed to see, was we needed to see him reclaim that confidence and, you know, be that scorer at the end of the game. And I think he has done that.
Yeah, there's no denying Tennessee. This win is great. It's a huge resume booster. But oh, if you got Houston, you know, if you got two ranked wins in non-conference play, that would have been kind of unprecedented for Syracuse in recent years. That was not something they were doing, and it came really close to it. If you figured out, your free throws. And I think it's so important to emphasize, you got to win out the rest of December outside of that Clemson game, which is at home. And, really, you should win all the home games. Clemson is a good team, but you'd hope you get that one on New Year's Eve. But next five games, Griffin, non-negotiable. You gotta run the house, and they should be blowouts, right?
Yeah, 100%. I don't think I have any doubt that Syracuse will do that. Five pretty bad non-conference opponents. I think Hofstra is the only non-quad
Quad three.
four in their quad three. So I'd like to see them ease Donnie back into it, not play him a lot, but work him up 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, like somewhere in there, just ramp his minutes up and get to where it's when ACC is back and is here that Donnie is back and ready to play at full throttle because he just adds a super different dynamic to this team where they can play bigger. He's the best scorer on the team. His defense will be a little bit of a question mark re-entering this lineup that has had a lot of success when Donnie has been out of the floor. So it'll be interesting. We still don't know exactly what his timeline is.
Of course we don't, because why would they tell us this time now?
He's been day to day as everyone's day to day in Syracuse athletics for a while. And so that'll be interesting. And then Syracuse has Clemson is his first ACC game. I know that's a ways away, but it's really not like it's in the month of December. And so Syracuse has to attack these non-conference games and go out and show why it can be the program that it once was.
Yeah, just I guess starting with the stretch here, St. Joseph's. It is a 9 p.m. tip on Thursday. The last time the 9 p.m. tip was it was against Monmouth. So let's hope this team is a night owl this time around and they don't fall asleep early because they were really asleep and they really never woke up in that game. So that has me a little worried just because of the same magnitude of opponent. I mean, St. Joseph's is 4-3. They don't have any great wins this year, so that would be a step back. We don't want to see that at all. So I have a lot of confidence, I guess. I think they're gonna breeze through this 5-game set here. They don't leave the dome, so that should be just they can stay here. They can just key in on that. I do like to see them ease Donnie back into this rotation, and yeah, I don't really have any worries. I think Red has got this team in a good spot right now. So I think in 5 games from now, we should be saying that was a good 5-0 stretch. Let's go get ACC play, and I think they will do that.
Certainly. They don't have to leave the dome until January 6th when they go to Atlanta to play Georgia Tech. And hopefully Donnie Freeman's okay. That was another concerning thing we learned. Just like last year, we saw him, he was in a boot. Apparently, I don't really remember taking observation of this, but he hurt himself against Monmouth. He was limping at times in that game. Hopefully that's it. It's just some minor thing. I never know, and I always kind of worry. When it comes to injuries at Syracuse, just because they don't tell you anything until a surgery has already taken place or something like that. But again, we have no idea. Hopefully he is okay and he'll be back Thursday when the Orange take on St. Joseph's, 9 p.m., as Josh mentioned, inside the JMA Wireless Dome. On the women's side, they had a really great Thanksgiving break. They couldn't beat out their toughest opponent, but they still get a result against Utah. And that's a decent Utah team. They get smoked by Michigan, but let's be real, Michigan is, a top team in the country. I don't think the expectation was for them to beat Michigan at all. But jump into this ACC-SEC challenge. In overtime, they sneak out a 6-point win and just a gutsy Felicia Leggett Jack type win. The type of wins we came accustomed to 2 years ago, Griffin.
Yeah, I mean, if you told me that Syracuse would have two power conference wins to start the year in its first eight games, I thought you'd be kind of crazy, This is a squad that has some talent, but it has a lot of unknowns and wasn't really sure how they would mesh together. But credit Coach Jack. She's really got this team playing well off the jump, which is good to see. Whenever you get to beat an SEC team, that's always a big accomplishment. Auburn's not the best team, but they're still a formidable opponent. And Syracuse beat them while missing 16 3-pointers and not making a single 3-pointer. 0 for 16 from three. That's a little absurd. Credit the free throws. This women's team knows how to shoot some free throws. 22 of 27. Like that's some good stuff right there. But in all seriousness, like this team could be a tournament team the way they're playing right now, and all depend on ACC play. But if they keep playing the way they do, they keep getting scoring from Leila Filia and Udrey Zogé and Dominique Darius. I think the one thing we really want to see is Sophie Burrows get some threes knocked down, and hopefully they'll come.
Griffin, this defense is suffocating. They turned Auburn over 27 times. I mean, that is really, really impressive. I mean, that was an 8-1 Tigers team. I mean, this was an evenly matched game, but you know, Auburn was definitely on the prowl. They were looking to knock off the Syracuse team, and like you said, it 0 for 16 from three. I mean, that is a recipe for disaster. I can't believe they won. They didn't make a three-pointer. You know, this is the second time this year they've made one or less three-pointers, and it doesn't seem to faze them at all. I mean, they're capable, the scorers on this team are capable of getting buckets even when they can't knock down the long ball. I just can't fathom you shoot the ball 16 times from beyond the arc and you don't see one go down, and you don't lose any confidence going into overtime there. Leila Filia with a couple clutch buckets, Dominique Darius with a couple clutch buckets. I mean, this team is rolling on all cylinders right now, and they didn't beat Michigan like I said they would. They had one bad quarter. I'll take the blame on that one. They scored just 6 points in the first quarter. It was actually on. I was getting my hair cut, and there was nothing else on at I think it was like 11:30 or noon on a Sunday. So they had it on, and I was watching it, and I was just shaking my head because the only quarter I saw was the first quarter, and I was like, this game should be in a different place right now. This is my team. They should be winning this game, and they just couldn't knock down anything. I think they shot like 27% from the field in that one. Michigan looked like just a way better team. But I'm very encouraged with where this team is at right now. Similar to the men's side, I think this is a tournament team. I think this, like I said at the start of the year, this is a top four team in the ACC, and it's that defense that's going to really carry them the course of the season.
It's certainly built off of the defense. That's how Felicia LeGet-Jack wants to build her teams. And those transfers, Dominique Darius, Leila Filia, their ability to drive to the cup and either draw contact or get a, really nifty or even miraculous layup off at times is really impressive. The threes have got to fall, and especially with Sophie Burrows, that's definitely been the most concerning factor. She shot 4 of 10 against Auburn. If she can figure it out, that's just another really good dynamic. Offensive dynamic to this team, to that, really needs that offensive boost at times, as Josh mentioned with Auburn. And for Syracuse, they got a few more games to round out their non-conference play before ACC play really ramps up. They do have kind of weird one ACC game sandwiched in between the full ACC play. That is SMU this Sunday. That is a good SMU team. So not an easy start to the season at all for Felicia LeGet-Jack team. And Griffin, if they could knock off SMU, like we're talking some national headlines here. This is big deal time.
Yeah, you gotta have some confidence. And then you come home, take care of Colgate and Binghamton and Mercyhurst. Those are teams that maybe not on the women's side necessarily, but Colgate always plays well in the dome no matter what sport it is,
Yes,
lacrosse,
that's true.
basketball, and that'll be interesting. And then after that, it's Duke, and Duke and Kara Lawson have had a tough start to their season. So if that's a winnable game, Duke's been a program recently under Coach Lawson that's been really, really, really good. And they had a really tough one against LSU last night, and I saw the headline. Flo-J Johnson was taunting the Duke bench, which was funny. But anyways, back on real talk. This team has potential. Like they made the tournament 2 years ago, and maybe they go back. Coach Shaq has been playing these players really, really well, and it's a good sight that both basketball teams are in a good spot for the first time in quite some time.
It definitely is. And Syracuse men's basketball, they're going to be back in action, as I mentioned, on Thursday at 9 p.m. So be sure to catch that one. Coverage starting at 8:30 on WAER with McClure Remodeling and countdown to tip off. And then the double overtime, it's a late one. It's all the way up to 1 a.m. A lot of callers after that Tennessee game, rightfully so. But if you're still up, be sure to call in, get your thoughts heard on what is hopefully a comfortable Syracuse win over what is not a really good St. Joseph's team. They do have that Philadelphia pride and grit, which you can never doubt, nor can you ever underestimate. Griffin is laughing and looking at me like I have seven heads.
I mean, it's been an interesting season for the Eagles. So that's all I'll say.
It
Patriots
has.
rolling, number
Still
one
first in
seed,
the
number one
division, though.
team. Well, yeah, let's switch to the rest of the division. Stinks. You talk about those Cowboys last night. They don't really look like a real football team.
Blew their season
Oh,
last
dude,
night.
Griff, I was so sold on the Cowboys winning last night. I think they were going to win the NFC East, and then they just
Yeah,
kind of gave
nope.
up last night. Maybe a little bit of ref show there at the end,
Oh,
offensive
come
pass
on.
interference on Ferguson. There was a little bit of everything last night.
The Cowboys are the Cowboys, and I think it'll always be their year until they eventually crumble. And I don't know why I'm hating on the Cowboys as Patriots fan. I mean, Patriots, hey, we can talk about the Patriots for a while. I
They're
mean, it's just the
rolling.
best team in the NFL. Like
Easy
Drake May, May,
schedule.
May,
Haven't
Drake
played a real
May is like
opponent,
playing well.
really. Easy schedule as they beat the Bills. Who else did they beat, Griff? They beat the
Bills
Bucks,
on the
right?
road?
All right, that's
You know
one.
about that?
I knew
Ooh,
about
that's
that
been
one,
on.
but I remember a
Tampa
lot of the
Bay?
Jets, Dolphins, Giants.
All right, well, you guys
All
can
right,
take care
Griff,
of
you're
the
getting
easy
hate for
teams.
playing teams in your division. Didn't know that was a thing now.
You have the Giants twice a year. Like, come on. That's
I'm just
almost as
salty
bad
to
as the
see the
Jets.
Patriots back on top. Thought that
Yep.
was I thought we were over.
Who?
I thought we were done with that.
Nope.
Credit to that team though. Credit to Drake May. He's having a great season. The Eagles will figure it out. Mark my word. You got one more thing, Griffin?
Yeah, I do. I think I forgot to mention this in the football talk, but there were some reports yesterday that Elijah Robinson might be on the move.
Yes.
LSU, Lane Kiffin. I mean, we don't have to touch about the Lane Kiffin thing. But actually, we will. I want to give
Sure.
a quick,
Sure.
like, if you were Lane Kiffin, what would you do? I think, and then if you were Ole Miss's athletic director, what would you do?
Okay. All right.
I
If
think
I'm,
everything. Go ahead. No,
go
go
ahead,
ahead. Go ahead.
Josh. Okay. If I was Lane Kiffin, I would have stayed because, as far as I know, the money was about the same. I think, unless there was a drastic change in money, which I understand, it's hard to turn down a lot of money. But if money was the same, I would have stayed at Ole Miss because you did that thing before where you left Tennessee for, at the time, the better job at USC and it didn't work out. And you just did it again. I would have stayed at Ole Miss, fight with those players. You were this close to the greatest. You would have been a god in Ole Miss because they never it, national championship isn't that's not something they sniff, and they were sniffing it this year. They were there was an opportunity to go a playoff run. There still is, but you're not going to be a part of it. I would have stayed at Ole Miss, and I think I absolutely respect their decision in not letting him coach the playoffs because I think that would have just been a weird dynamic. I don't think it would have worked out.
As far as Kiffin, I think making the right decision, yeah, I think it is the right decision to go to LSU. You're going to have a way easier time recruiting. You're going to have a lot more money. I just think that aspect of it is a big part because, I mean, even if Mississippi State isn't a very good football team, you're still sharing that state. LSU is basically all by itself. So I think, plus, I mean, this team won a national championship 5 years ago. I mean, you talk about, a national brand with head coaches Ed Orgeron and Brian Kelly. I mean, you're joining an elite list of coaches, although Brian Kelly's not a very good coach. You're joining an elite list of names, at least. And I think the money was not substantially higher, but I think he is going to get more money than he did at Ole Miss. The one thing I would change about this whole situation, it was handled awful by, if you want to blame Kiffin, if you want to blame Ole Miss, the whole ultimatum, and we had reporters lining up outside the meeting house, and it was just like, this is way too extra for, a coach just changing schools. I mean, is Lane Kiffin that big of a name that we need to be like on a 24/7 watch party to see where he goes? I mean, this is not Nick Saban. This is not Kirby Smart. Like, this is Lane Kiffin. Like, this guy has, a couple good jobs in his career, but the blowout the media did over this whole thing was just so far overblown. And I do think, to circle back, Ole Miss, right decision to not let him coach. I mean, you have players coming out and quoting his tweet saying that that's not what he told them, that he the players wanted him to come back and coach, players saying that he don't want him to come back and coach. I mean, there's just a dramatic aspect that, you know, Ole Miss kind of nipped the bud here and said, you know, we're good. We'll let the assistants, the coordinators take it from here. And, you know, it's not going to matter at the end of the day because, you know, Ole Miss is not going to win the national championship. So it was a good run, but yeah, that not enough steam power there.
I disagree with you on the fact that Lane Kiffin's not a big name. He's a pretty big name, and I think he has thing. I don't think it's about Lane Kiffin though. I think it's just about that Ole Miss is a program that's not usually in, I guess, the new playoffs, but in a contention to win a national championship. And who knows, the way they were playing, that they could maybe hang with the big boys. And I think that's just the reason why it got so much national attention. And then Lane Kiffin's obviously a character, as we know from his Tennessee and Raiders and USC days. And I agree. I think I think he made the right decision for himself. Like, I think it sucks that that's the right decision. I think I wish, like, the right decision was to stay with Ole Miss. But I also agree, like, Ole Miss, the athletic director, hey, if you want to leave, get out of here. Like, fine.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to Elijah Robinson. Obviously, he got demoted on Tuesday to co-defensive coordinator, defensive line coach. Not going to be calling plays next year, regardless of if he decides to stay Syracuse. And then, you know, there's some reports that, like, hey, Lane Kiffin, he's calling Elijah Robinson's name. You know, he was obviously the associate head coach at Texas A&M. He was the interim head coach at Texas A&M when Jimbo Fisher got booted out of there. And so, like, it'll be interesting, like, defensive line coach at LSU. It's a good job. Is it a step down? Is it a step up? I think it might be a little lateral move from calling plays at Syracuse, but now he's not going to call plays anymore, so might as well go take that LSU job. Really good recruiter. So that could really shake up the defense and see if maybe some Syracuse guys follow him to LSU if he does decide to leave.
That'll be interesting, yeah. Another point, I do think it's just another message at college football and the NCAA, you know, change the system. You know, why does recruiting signing day have to be before the postseason begins? If you push that back, you know, Lane Kiffin is maybe still at Ole Miss and he doesn't need to take that LSU job right away. He could wait on him because he isn't jeopardizing anything. But unfortunately, the way things are set up with the portal and recruiting, it's happening during the season. And you saw that with Syracuse all season long. There are so many games where the field was littered with recruits and whatnot. And that is just a dynamic that college football has and college athletics has that professional sports doesn't. You would never see this in a professional landscape, but you see it in college. It was certainly an interesting saga. And there will be more coaching changes, I think, for Syracuse football down the line. We'll have all that covered on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. As I mentioned, St. Joseph's for men's basketball, 8:30 WAR's coverage starts, double overtime all the way until 1 a.m. We'll be back after that game, maybe with a fun guest to talk to as well. And, you know, we'll have you covered through the rest of basketball season, giving you those football updates as well. But things are on the up and up in Syracuse with what looks to be really strong men's and women's basketball teams. Be sure to stay here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast for all the information and more. That'll do it for me, Griffin, and Josh. Thanks for listening. Be sure to listen to previous episodes wherever you get your podcast or at WAER.org. That'll do it. Thanks for listening.